Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, March the 9th, 2016, 1:11 coming up on 1:12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we would love to thank the guests we've had on today. President Reagan biographer, Edmund Morris, who wrote the biography Dutch Had a Personal Relationship with Ron and Nancy Reagan from 1984 to 1994, remembering former First Lady Nancy Reagan earlier on in the program, as well as Lieutenant Governor of the State of Ohio, Mary Taylor, giving her thoughts on the election last night. Now, folks, if you have a radio, seriously, just tear the knob off. Just tear the knob off, because we're about to have one of my favorite guests of all time. I badger him with requests to come on this show, because every time he's on, it's not an interview. This won't be an interview. We'll try to have it be some semblance of an interview, but it won't be. It'll just be a lot of fun. He is a legend in films. He is a legend in television. He's a legend. He's a great playwright. He writes books. He's just prolific. We're going to try to talk about the election, not that we'll get to that or anything else of importance, but we're going to talk for about 40 minutes here. He is Charles Grodin. Before we get to Mr. Grodin, though, as I always do, I want to play one of those classic clips of him being, well, what he says is an act. Jury's out. After this interview today, you tell me. Being the belligerent guest on late night television, here's a clip with David Letterman.
Do you feel, as you go through life, that you should point this out to people when you run into their character flaws?
No, but if you ever
run into people?
Well, that's a pretty short list. I'm telling you.
Have you ever been out socially with someone who's not involved with this show?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Really?
The time. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the last decade or so?
Yes.
You have?
Yeah, all the time.
All the time.
Mm-hmm. And you? Well, now, what was that? I saw a little. You just.
I don't believe you.
No, you did
I don't
this.
Believe
little,
you.
You did this. No, but more than doubting.
Here's
what you did.
I snickered.
It was more of a sneer. Yeah. It was a sneer. It was an audible sneer. That's what it was.
I don't believe you.
It was very dismissive.
I don't believe you. I don't think it's appropriate. It's still a national show. It might not be in prime time, but it's still. You can't just make up that you're this socialite who's around.
I'm not a socialite. I never said I was a socialite. You've never been anywhere but here. Desperate man. You're fabricating. You've never seen anywhere but here that anyone wrote about anywhere with anyone. I don't know. Maybe.
Have you ever been anywhere but here at home, here at home, here
well,
at home,
yeah,
here at home?
I go on a regular basis. I go other places. I have activities.
I saw a photograph of you with
there
your
you
son. You were down somewhere. But I'm talking about with people more or less your age.
Well, that would be who? You and Regis and that's it. That's just the three of us. And not many of us left.
It's all over.
Yeah.
You didn't get the notice?
No.
It's like my jacket didn't come in.
Hey, wait a minute. Let me check on that. Did the jacket come in yet?
His movies include Midnight Run, Beethoven, The Heartbreak Kid, King Kong, not the Fay Wray version, but the 1976 version, Rosemary's Baby. His books include If I Only Knew Then, It Would Be So Nice If You Weren't Here, How I Get to Be Whoever It Is I Am, When You're Ready, Mr. Grodin, I Like It Better When You Were Funny. Oh my goodness, the only man who could follow the Lieutenant Governor and Edmund Morris, Charles Grodin. Charles, are you there?
Thank you, yes. Since I've done that interview with you or wherever I said that, it turns out that David Letterman did go out with our mutual friend Regis Philbin.
He did?
Yeah, he's not on the air anymore, you know, but he did go out with Regis, and I was going to call Regis and just see what it would be like if the three of us went out and just to chronicle it later.
But that has not happened?
Not yet. I've been doing some light workouts first.
Oh, well, that's good to hear, because you need it, Charles, because I saw the movie Madoff.
Right.
Oh, man. With Richard Dreyfuss as
right.
Bernie Madoff, you were in it,
right.
Delivered another fantastic performance.
Thank you. You know, Richard Dreyfuss is really the amazing person there. He's had so much, when he got up to walk away after the scene, I was looking at him carefully because he's had so many illnesses that he's physically had so much trouble, and he just stays in there and keeps showing up and working. He walked down the hall. I wondered if he was going to fall over. He was tilting so much. And he's an amazing guy.
He was tilting.
Yeah, like from right to left, like maybe he'd have to balance himself against the wall. I don't know what it is. He's not your boy next door. He's, if I recall correctly, he has sued three of his ex-wives.
Really?
It's either two or three, but that, yeah, that's unfortunately true.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear about that.
Yeah, he's quite something. I go way back with him in 1974. I was out of town trying to help a play that was in trouble out of town. My best friend had written it, and I got a call to meet an unknown director named Steven Spielberg. And I was really too busy to meet him. I said, "What's he done?" They said, "Sugarland Express." So I didn't meet him, and I said, "What's the role?" It's an ichthyologist. What's an ichthyologist? An expert on sharks. And the movie was Jaws, and the role, since I couldn't meet Steven Spielberg, the role went to Richard Dreyfuss, and he was tremendous in it.
Steven Spielberg, whatever happened to him?
Well, I'm sure he's still out there, isn't he, or is he? I don't keep track of this.
You know, Charles, you're telling us some behind-the-scenes stuff. You know, you have a little Liz Smith in you today.
I do.
You well, like maybe. Liz, don't you?
Well, yeah, I'm a commentator for CBS News, so I do five a week for the last 15 years, every week, five a week. So you have to keep your eyes open for everything.
Well, you know I would never say anything negative, but these five, it's not really heavy lifting, the things you do there, Charles.
Well, you have to come up with them. I'm going to be recording them after I finish talking to you. I'm actually going to record them.
Oh, give me one.
All right. This is about Donald Trump.
Ooh, here we go.
I saw a woman being asked how she feels about all of Donald Trump's offensive comments about women. She said he insults men, too. I had a brief encounter with Donald Trump. He asked me what I was doing. I said, "I'm a commentator for 60 Minutes. He said, "I don't watch 60 Minutes. He struck me as someone who is most comfortable being a critic, not the best quality for a president. I want someone who brings us together, not drives us apart." And that's it.
See, it's a wonder you have time to do anything else during the week, Charles.
Well, I do. This does occupy me a fair amount. And then I'm doing this movie, as I said, with De Niro right now, the comedians.
Yeah, it's going to be big.
Yeah, I think so.
You told us last time you were going to get Professor Irwin Corey in that movie. Did you get that done?
I don't remember. Is Irwin Corey still around?
101 year old.
Is he really?
Yeah. Wow. Oh, you know what? Oh, this is I just crossed my mind. Charles, last time we were on, we talked about legendary radio personality Bob Elliott.
Oh, yeah.
Who passed away since we've talked last.
Yeah, that's right. He has. I did go up to Maine to visit him, which, for me, I don't go anywhere. I'm in Connecticut now, and we have a nice place in New York, and I seldom go there. But I did go to Maine to meet with Bob Elliott because he asked me to, and I did go to Maine. And I think I may have told you the flight to Maine from JFK Airport was shorter than the drive from the airport to Bob Elliott's house.
Is that right?
I should have looked and see. Maine is very big. You know, you don't think of it that way, but it's huge. If you look at your map, you'll see Maine is just, I don't know how many square miles it is, but it's just it's a very big state, maybe the biggest.
You're exactly, very perceptive, Charles.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, I want to get back to this Trump thing here, because, see, that sounded a little negative, and you're going to end up on his anti-tweet list.
Right.
You know he likes to fire back at people.
Right. Well, he can do it, you know. It's okay.
What is going on, Charles? He's winning. He's winning big. He won Michigan last night. He won Mississippi. He's on his way.
You know, I briefly spent some time with him, and I briefly spent some time with Hillary Clinton, and I just thought that he was a guy looking for a fight. I think, I don't know if I've already said this, but years ago I had him on my cable show with and he followed Merv Griffin, and he was talking about suing Merv Griffin. This was 1995. So way back then, litigation is like very front and foremost on his mind for whatever reason. And I don't know, I just think I would say that our chances of getting into a war are much greater. I'm not saying we would, God forbid, but if he were president, he seems to like just want to get square off with everybody.
Well, that being said, it's interesting because he had his little stint last week with the KKK where he didn't hear the question or whatever he said. And, of course, he called the Pope disgraceful.
Right.
And he's made some comments about women and wants to build a wall between here and Mexico. Nothing nobody's heard.
Which he denies, but they have him on tape saying it.
They do have him on tape saying it. That being said, he's still winning. Now, what is the reason for that?
Well, people, you know, maybe they just know the people are unhappy. It's very easy to be unhappy. And he's against the establishment, and people, so they say, I'm unhappy, I'm against the establishment, without realizing what they want may be more than they bargained for. You may not know what you're in for. This guy, I think, as I said before, this guy, not to say he would, but the odds are that we would be in a war are much greater with him there than anybody I can think of.
To my knowledge, he doesn't have any experience in the political world except giving donations.
Yeah.
Isn't that a little scary that you become the most powerful person on planet Earth and you've never done anything in that field?
It's very odd. It is scary. It is scary. And then, of course, the donations, he'll quarrel with you about that, too. And he'll debate with you about how much money he inherited from his father. His father gave him. I don't know. All I know is before all this started, if you would drive into New York, you'd see the name Trump on a lot of buildings.
Well, did you hear that this might be something for a future radio commentary?
Right.
Last night, he was at this... did you watch any of it last night, Charles?
Tell me what it was, and I'll remember.
Oh, okay, here we go. He got up and gave his speech last night after he won Michigan and won Mississippi.
Right.
And he kept saying, well, you know, Mitt Romney said that Trump vodka was out of business, and here's Trump vodka, and Trump steaks was out of business,
right.
And here are the steaks.
Yeah.
And then it was reported that the steaks were actually not Trump steaks, that he had bought those, his
right.
people, at a butcher. And they just slapped a label over top of them.
I mean, there are people like this, but you don't see them as president of the United States.
But you know, it doesn't affect him. That's the why. It would affect
people. It may not affect him, but hopefully it will affect the voters once they take a look and say, wait a minute, what are we getting into here?
But they haven't yet. When is that point, Charles?
Not yet. I don't know. I'd be very wary of him.
Well, it's very interesting. You say you've spent time with Hillary. What's your impression of her?
I was a very brief encounter. We were both sitting in the back of a room at a board meeting of something. And we were both in the back. I was way in the back, and she was even further back than I was. And just as a joke, as I was leaving, I said to her, I understand you're going to sing tonight. And she said, that'll empty the joint in a hurry. So I like her. You know, I know her, as I said briefly. I knew President Clinton. I would be more inclined for somebody who's already been a senator, who's been the Secretary of State, somebody who's had that experience at that level, than I would with somebody like Donald Trump.
Bernie won Michigan last night. Do you like Bernie?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it may be unrealistic. I tend more in a direction that he's going, but what he's saying may be unrealistic. I'd have to see exactly what he's specifically saying. You know, that he can, it's true, there are a lot of people that are like just are forgotten in America, but exactly how is he going to take care of this, and can he get it done? I mean, they're great ideas, but you got to be able to get them through the Congress, and that's the question.
Well, what has happened in our political system where people can just say, I mean, there's always been spinning to some degree,
right.
But people had a plan. I'm not sure what the plans are here, and I'm not sure if the voters even care.
Well, again, it's pretty complicated. I'm probably more informed than your average person. I find it very hard to follow all of these things, and what do you do, and how do you do it, and are people that you want to build a wall, you're not going to build a wall. There are people coming across the border who aren't properly vetted. There's some truth in everything, but is the answer build a wall? And then build a wall, don't build a wall. I didn't say I was going to build a wall. Well, I might build a wall. I mean, you just get dizzy listening to him.
Well, and the Republicans seem to be having more trouble than anybody because there's actually an anti-Trump movement. How can this happen in a party? Shouldn't somebody have, maybe got out and shook the rugs before?
There's some people I've actually heard said that they would vote for Trump for the nomination, but they wouldn't vote for him for president, which really astonished me. That's a comment I really hadn't heard, that one.
Well, you know, the debate last week, Charles, I don't know if you watched it, the
Probably.
Republican debate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. They Rubio and Kasich and Cruz are all up there, and they 2 hours of taking shots at Donald Trump, right. And then at the end they say, "But would you support him?" And they all said yes.
Yeah, I find that very strange as well.
I thought that was kind of undercut the whole thing.
Mitt Romney, you know, he's against him, then he's supporting him, and the same thing with Christie. He's against him, and then he's supporting him, and then he's there, and then he's dropping out, and he's, you know, there he is standing right behind Trump, who's at the podium, somebody he has attacked in the past, but he's standing back there. And, you know, I was waiting for the television producers to put up what he had said in the past about the guy he's now supporting. You know, it's very questionable. I mean, I ran for office in school, but you know, you get out there and you look at what people are saying against what they've said in the past, and it's pretty it's just not a field you want to go into.
Well, what frightened me was I always thought, you know, I guess I'm an optimist. I think, well, the media, they are going to question him. It's going to be tough. But then I saw that video a few weeks ago of him whispering to Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski,
yeah,
don't hit me with any hard questions, and they agreed.
I didn't see that one. I'm surprised to hear that. That's pathetic.
That's horrible. I don't,
yeah,
know. Well, you know, and this is a realization that hit me this morning, Charles, is, you know, people always ask him about these things like, oh, you had people raise your hand like Hitler and that sort of thing, but nobody ever says, what's your economic plan?
Right. And even if he said it's very complicated. It's very sophisticated. And first of all, I have reason to believe that he doesn't fully get it, and I'm not qualified to comment on it. But you know, there are people, or millions of people in America that do need the government to pay more attention to them. But is he the man to have them do it? I doubt it.
Well, he blows my mind to this effect, and I understand why people are comparing him to Hitler. They're not comparing him to Hitler in that he's going to try,
yeah,
to exterminate a race or anything,
right,
but that, you know, Hitler was elected to power,
right,
and he did it by just saying, you know, Germany's down, we're going to make it great again. It sounds very familiar.
Yeah, I've seen that comparison. It's a little rough. I don't think I'd go that far, but it's true. When Hitler came in, nobody had any idea that he was going to do what he did.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think Donald Trump, he seems to have a... Do you think it's a show like the New York Times feels, that they have this tape that he's just saying things to get the job?
I don't know what he thinks. I really don't know what he thinks. It's hard for me to say. Maybe he means everything he says. It's just that when you say things that contradict what you said earlier, you get to be... I would be very uncomfortable with him as a candidate.
Does the torture thing bother you?
Yeah,
that he seems to.
Oh yeah,
support
back and
torture.
Forth on that one too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, we can't do anything like that. I mean, whenever he said we wouldn't do anything like that, and then he said he would only give this order if the people would take it as a legitimate order. So he backtracked on that one too.
But people will say, why are you voting for him? And they say, because he tells it like it is.
Yeah, well, it's as I said, I'm probably more informed than your average person, but it's very complicated. What do you do exactly to help all the millions of people in America that aren't being paid attention to, that do have a reason to wonder where the jobs are? It's complicated, and I don't see him as that complicated to be able to handle it.
This impacts you and I, Charles, and I'm surprised this did not get more play when it came out 2 weeks ago. I want to read this for the audience because I think it's important. Donald Trump said 2 Fridays ago that if elected president, he will change the nation's libel laws in order to make it easier to sue news organizations.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I'm going to do if I win, I'm going to open up our libel laws so when they write purposely negative and horrible and false articles, we can sue them and win lots of money, Trump said. We're going to open up those libel laws so when the New York Times writes a hit piece, which is a total disgrace, or when the Washington Post, which is there for other reasons, writes a hit piece, we can sue them and win money instead of having no chance of winning because they're totally protected. We're going to open up libel laws and we're going to have people sue you like you've never been sued before. No federal libel law currently exists because the libel suits are handled by the state courts. Somebody should have pointed that out to him. But since 1964, when the Supreme Court ruled ruled on the New York Times versus Sullivan, public individuals who wish to sue media companies are liable and required to prove that the news organization knowingly published false information with malicious intent. That's First Amendment stuff there, Charles.
Well, someone more informed than I answered that on him. He's too much shoot from the hip for me. You can't do that. I mean, he's not just hanging out in a bar chatting with friends. You know, you want to run for the president of the United States. I don't understand it. I don't really understand the libel laws well enough, and I doubt that he does. But there he is. He's never at a loss for words, let's put it like that, whether he knows it or not, whether he knows what he's saying or not.
You know, Charles, just to get away from this for a second, your book titles are so difficult to pronounce. I love the books.
which one's difficult?
I was going through those. I was trying to you know, hit all the books there, and it's if I only knew then, it would be so nice if you weren't here.
If I only knew then might be the best book, because it's like 80 people wrote essays in it for me, and it's people talking about, actually I have a copy very nearby. It's If I Only Knew Then, Learning from Our Mistakes, by me and friends of friends, and it has a whole lot of people in there. Carol Burnett, Walter Cronkite, Governor Mario Cuomo, Peter Falk, Senator Orrin Hatch, Shirley MacLaine, and it's all people who talk about what they learned from their mistakes.
Oh, it's a great book. And I've also read How I Got to Be Whoever It Is I Am, but that doesn't roll off your tongue.
How I Got to Be Whoever It Is I Am, yeah.
But it's a good book.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me. I don't know what I've written, like 7, 8, I don't know. I usually have another one coming. I don't even know. It's hard to have all this written down.
Do you come up with these titles, Charles?
Oh, sure, whatever it is, for better or worse, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you told a story on Johnny Carson years ago about because the 1989 is when It Would Be So Nice If You Weren't Here came out.
Right.
Tell the story of where that title came from.
I was making a movie in London. Candace Bergen and I were the leading people in the movie, and we were they were setting up the cameras in the hallway of this castle. And we were just sitting in a room off, waiting to be called, in a room off the hallway where the cameras were. And a woman opened the door, and she looked at us and said, "Did someone ask you to wait in here?" I said, "No." She said, "It'd be so nice if you weren't here." And I immediately took that as such a great line as, okay, that's the title of a book. And I made it the title of might have been my first book. It was all about dealing with rejection in show business, where basically everybody, when I was starting out, I asked an agent if I should have pictures made, and he said, "Yeah, I have pictures made." Then the people who don't want to see you will know who it is they don't want to see. And it was just filled with that, one thing after another, and you just have to press ahead and persevere, and that's what it takes. I mean, perseverance is as important as ability.
You know, when I think back to you and Johnny Carson, boy, those were some great exchanges. We played a little David Letterman there, but I want to go back to, hang with me here, Charles.
Sure.
September 6th, 1990, Charles Grodin on The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson.
A lot of people, when you're on the show, they write me and they call and they say, why does Charles Grodin treat you so shabbily? Doesn't he like you? What is it? I mean, you want to address that or speak to that question?
I don't know what to do when I'm out here, because most of the reasons people come on a talk show, I can't really do that. I can't come out and why do people come on a talk show, in your opinion? You're Mr. Talk Show.
To plug this book, to plug this movie.
Okay, and if I would do that...
else are you here for?
That's what I'm asking. If I would do that, your attitude would be disdain. You know, when I tried to talk about my book, you said... 1895, you know, that's a lot of money for a book.
I thought
I said,
it was.
It's my whole life.
I thought it was.
And you said, you know, maybe if it's Mother Teresa's life. You know.
You remember those things, don't you?
Yes, I do.
I didn't know you were that sensitive. You actually remember that.
I'm so sensitive, I really can't answer a question from someone who's not interested in the question.
I'm very interested in the question. Now, what? It's all right. It's okay. I'm used to it. Now, what does the paperback go for?
This is $9.95.
Well, now we're talking. You see? You should have started out with $9.95, then this would have been $4.60 by now. But I suppose the thing is to get it when you can.
Are you whispering again?
Oh, no, you said
you're
I'm whispering last time.
Yeah, you talk very softly for me. I don't know why.
All right, you hear
this
me
is
right
what
in?
You sound like. Okay. You talking? You made a book, $9.95.
Have you seen those little whisper things that people get who are just on the edge of going completely deaf? Where you hear something? I'm going to get you.
You think
one
it's
of those.
Me?
Yeah, I think you're losing it.
Well, maybe it is me. And now you want to know why I mistreat you.
That's right. Now, people don't understand when you come out here. And
well, but look at you. I mean, you don't really care what I have to say, do you? Honestly?
No. I got to do an hour a night.
Yeah.
I'm looking for warm bodies.
Right.
That's all.
And
if I can get 7 minutes out of you, I take a bundle, I go home to Malibu.
Legendary Johnny Carson. Boy, there was nobody like him, was there, Charles? Legendary Johnny Carson. Nobody like him. Are you there, Charles? Uh-oh. We might have lost Charles.
Hopefully we'll get him back here. I don't know what happened there. Maybe he passed out. Hopefully we'll get Charles Grodin back here in a second. Hope you enjoyed that clip with the legendary Johnny Carson talking with Charles Grodin. What a great pair those two were. Amazing, amazing chemistry for many, many years on The Tonight Show. So hopefully we'll get Charles back here momentarily. Boy, I hope we didn't set him off. Boy, that would just be a nightmare. Again, some of Charles's books, great books. If I Only Knew Then, It Would Be So Nice If You Weren't Here, How I Got to Be Whoever It Is That I Am, We're Ready for You, Mr. Grodin, I Like It Better When You're Funny, and let's check out some of his movies. Movies, tremendous. Midnight Run, Beethoven, The Heartbreak Kid, While We're Young, King Kong 1976, Rosemary's Baby, all kinds of really great movies. And hopefully we hear back from Charles Grodin here momentarily. Who knows what happened to him? There's so much more to talk about on the program today. So, I tell you what, we've lost Charles. We're going to try to get back Charles Grodin here. Stay with us. We will be right back after this short break. Everybody's talking about Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio from legendary comedian Kay Ballard, performing the fast food song.
Oh, there's one song that you like. I feel that, you know, fast foods have ruined the world.
Oh.
On the Champs-Élysées, on the Appian Way, there's McDonald's. By the tomb of King Tut, there's a chuck full of nuts and McDonald's. At the Scala, they sing by a big Burger King where the styrofoam boxes go sweet. What's the use? What's the hell? I just heard Taco Bell went and franchised the wing at the Louvre. You know, I could go on and on and on, but that's it. I love things that are topical and that are kind of true.
The legendary actress and the voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll.
What would we do without gossip, for heaven's sake, Scott? Oh, it's naughty, but it certainly fulfills a certain catty side of all of us. Oh, good Lord. When you think of the gossip sessions you've had with friends over the years, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's like putting your hands in front of a lovely fire.
I will do
anything you want, Scott. You know I enjoy being on your show. Look, well, just let me talking and I keep going.
It's Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Join me.
Scott Spears back with you 40 minutes past the hour. Charles Grodin, have we regained
Yes, I'm back on. We got disconnected for some reason.
Oh, it was the ghost of Johnny Carson.
Okay.
Now, how much of that did you hear?
I didn't hear any of it.
Oh, that's horrible. Oh, no. But it was a good bit where he was saying he didn't care what you had to say. If he can get 7 minutes out of you, he's off to Malibu with a bundle.
Right. I remember, yeah. Well, you know, I don't know whether I said this, but I actually saw him off camera as well. I actually had dinner with him once, and it was really some experience coming into a restaurant seeing Johnny Carson sitting in a booth waiting for you. It was, you know, on the Tonight Show, you expect it. Of course, he's behind the desk, but to see him to see him sitting in a restaurant by himself waiting for me was astonishing. And he even at some point, I don't know whether I mentioned this, asked me if I would go on a safari with him to Africa. And I just thought, oh, no, not for me. And later I read a book that I guess his attorney wrote about him, that he didn't really have all that many friends, and he had a kind of a complicated personal life, to put it mildly. And I don't know that I'd have gone to Africa, but I would have certainly sought out and been more available to him if I had known that about him.
You know, you told the story of why you started doing that curmudgeon-y talk show guest, but did you ever talk to him about what you were going to talk about?
No, no. Actually, I remember the talent coordinator, a fellow named Bob Dolce. He said we would do pre-interview, then I'd go out there and do anything. He once said to me, I have no idea who that is sitting there, because he didn't see me that way, and I didn't. It just happened when I go out there. I would just start to be difficult or contrary or anything, just not to say nice to be here. Here's my new movie, et cetera, et cetera.
But it worked for you. Now, when David Letterman called you up, because you're not that way on all shows, so when David Letterman called you up, did they say, we want that guy? Or was that just a decision?
No, I just did it. You know, it's funny. Sometimes I would even do a pre-interview, and then when I would get out there, it would just all go out the window. I don't know. Just my instinct said, you don't want to go out there and say how excited you are about your new project.
You know, it's interesting. So if you would go on, let's say, Jimmy Fallon today, would you be that guy?
I don't know. I think I was on, maybe I was on his show. I can't remember. I think I was that guy.
Oh, I'm sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, I think it was a year or two ago.
Well, see, that's interesting, but you say you do that for the audience.
It just feels like it. Be better than to say how excited I am about my whatever the project is.
But when we first talked on radio, which has been a while ago now, when you came on, you said that's not really you. It's just it's hard for you to go into a room with a studio audience and just talk
now. Right, exactly right. I mean, it's an entertainment slot. You don't want to go out there and say, Scott, really nice to hear from you. It's been a while. Hope you're well. I'm busy working on, et cetera, et cetera. Just, to me, that's not interesting.
But, you know, they say, I think psychiatrists say, that all things that come out of us have some derivation in our personality.
I'm sure that's true.
So he lives in there somewhere.
Yes, somewhere I live in there.
Because you've been a curmudgeon on this show at times, but I like it.
I don't remember that. The thing that I'm most struck at for what I have no idea why this has come to mind now, but when I was in sixth grade, that would make me 11 years old, I was elected president of my class. Then I was removed from the presidency by the teacher, which, in other words, I was impeached at the age of 11. And that when I said, why? She said, you talk incessantly. I said, what's incessantly mean? She says, look it up in the dictionary. It says, talk without cease. So that was sixth grade. But then I went on to high school, where I think one of the two things I'm most proud of in my life is, like, we came to this high school from, like, three or four elementary schools that took you up to eighth grade. And within 2 weeks, maybe, of coming into this class, where two-thirds of the people who were meeting each other for the first time, I was elected president, and then I was elected president seven more times. And I really, honestly, I had no idea. I had no idea why. And then somewhere around the sixth time, in 11th grade, I asked what we used to call a Negro girl in my class. Her name was Joanne Snyder. I remember that, why this was happening. And she said, you care about people. And it never had occurred to me. I thought everyone cared about people. It took me many, many years to realize it's rare that people care about people unless they're close, their family. So evidently that's true. So I was very proud that that happened so quickly in high school. And then the other thing that locally where I live in Connecticut, there was a very dangerous intersection. I was able to get a stop sign there, and the paper called me up and wanted to get a picture of me standing next to the stop sign. I said, no, that just seems like an egomaniacal thing to do. So, but whenever we pass that stop sign, my wife is aware of it. She'll say, oh, there's your stop sign, you know, then that's good. But the biggest thing I think I've ever done is it seems strange that I'm going to say this, I actually was given credit for reforming New York's Rockefeller drug laws. The drug laws...
Now, you say that teacher said incessantly was the word, right?
Incessantly,
okay.
Without cease.
I understand that.
Yeah, but the drug laws I became aware of when I had my cable show on CNBC, and you could be sentenced to 20 years to life, and someone was, for delivering a package. A woman with no prior record, with four small children, living in Harlem, no money, no man around, and somebody paid her, I think it was whatever, I forget the exact figure, I don't want to misstate it, but it wasn't a ton of money, and she grabbed it to deliver a package of cocaine to somebody in Albany, and it was a setup by somebody who wanted to get a break on his own sentence with the police, and she was arrested and sentenced to 20 years to life. And that was the case I took on and got her out after she had served 16 years, and that case led to the reform of the Rockefeller drug laws. If you're deliver a package today in New York and it's got cocaine and you're not going to get sentenced to 20 years to life.
And that, so, and that's a true story.
It's all true, yeah.
Absolutely. And here's two things that come to mind, and that is very serious, and you should be commended for that, and I know you've gotten awards for that, and that's great. It truly is, because that's nuts that law exists.
Well, there are thousands of people who are in prison.
Ridiculous.
For delivering a package, and they're almost all... When I would go to visit the prisons, which I used to do regularly, you almost saw no white people there. It was all black and Hispanic people.
Well, see, and that says something. I guess people will have to draw their own conclusions as to what it says, but
I'm working on something right now. I visited a young man. I'm not really getting involved with this anymore, but I visited this young man who was serving life with no chance of parole for... he killed three people while high on heroin, and when I went to visit him, he was not on heroin, of course, in the prison, and... you look at him, he looks like the last person in the world that would do this. And so I'm working on trying to get the governor's office in New York to have him go in custody and visit juvenile detention centers and warn the kids there, like, don't get involved with heroin. Your personality will completely change and you'll be capable of things you wouldn't even dream of doing.
And we have that problem here. It's
yeah.
Rampant. It's terribly unfortunate. You know, Charles, when I have you on, this is what just occurred to me. In all the interviews we've done, if I have somebody on, like during the break there, I ran the little clip of highlights of Kay Ballard and Pat Carroll on this show.
Right.
When they come on, we do like a career sketch. You know, why did you become an actor? That's impossible with you because you have your own, I'm going to say, agenda when you come on. But it's refreshing.
Well, I'll tell you, I haven't even gotten to my agenda today, so let me get to it.
Please do.
I started a foundation, I forget when, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, called Lend a Hand Foundation. And what it is, people, this is money that I've raised to give to people who are in dire need, who aren't covered by any other organization. And I have, like this woman that I mentioned before, she got out of prison and she didn't have any money, and she had a prison background, and what was she going to do? She had five small children. So what is she supposed to do? So this Lend a Hand Foundation, I get the money, and I'm very careful where it goes. And what's different about this charity, there's no, in other words, if I get $10,000, that $10,000 goes out. I take no fee. And all the charities I've been involved with, there's something called human resources where 20, 30, 40, sometimes 50% of it goes to the people who work at the charity. Lend a Hand, I take no money. And I just get it to people who are in dire situations who aren't getting help by anybody. So it's Lend a Hand Foundation. If anybody would like to contribute to that, they can send the money to you, Scott, and I'm just trusting you'll find some way to get it on to me.
Oh, certainly, and people can bring it here to the station, 1421 Marion Waldo Road, 43302.
Did you say 1421?
1421.
You know, that's my home address in Pittsburgh.
Is that right?
That's pretty odd, isn't it?
Do you live in Pittsburgh?
No, but when I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, and I attempted to grow up there, and that was 1421 North St. Clair Street.
Well, I'll tell you, nobody could confuse this program as Entertainment Today. No, nobody will make that confusion. But, because we're getting to the last 10 minutes, and that always depresses me, Charles, because I love talking with you.
Thank you.
It's always fascinating. And then you become difficult to get back on. I shouldn't say that. You come on quite a bit.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that I ever turned you down.
Well, sometimes.
I'm not even aware of it. Maybe you're getting through the guard, you know.
Well, but I always appreciate it because it's an enjoyable time, and I think it's enjoyable for the audience.
But, hey,
there we go. That's high praise. I'm going to put that on a spot. Now, but we have had a running issue here since day one. Because, as I've said, we are in Ohio here, and, of course, the patron saint of talk shows, the talk show inventor, came from Ohio, Phil Donahue.
Right.
He's one of your friends.
Yes.
The first time you were on, I said, you mentioned it, you dropped his name, and I said, boy, Phil Donahue was on one time about 10 years ago, and we just talked about Body of War. Boy, I'd love to have him on to talk about the election. And you said, well, you'll talk to him about it.
Give me the phone number. I would ask him to call. I'm going to write it. I have a pad right here.
But it's the same one you called.
Just say that to me again.
I'll say it to you. 740.
Right.
383.
Right.
9944.
9944. And you're in Marion, Ohio?
Marion, Ohio. Not too far from Dayton, where he lived and started.
Okay. I'll get this on to him. I don't know whether I probably have in the past, but I'll reach out to him. I don't know what he's doing. I haven't talked to him in a while, but it'll give me a real reason to call him.
Well, here's what happened, though. Because last time, the first time, nothing happened.
Right.
And I said, oh, okay, well, you know, Charles is busy. That's fine. He's making Madoff. And then you came on again, and then we had to do like a Watergate burglar sting operation.
Right.
I asked you on the air, and you said I had to call when the interview was over, and you weren't going to answer the phone even though you were there, and leave my information, and you'll contact Phil. And
I don't even remember any of this, but if you say so.
It's on tape. It's documented. Okay. And nothing ever happened. So
well, I just wrote down your number, and I have his number, and I'll ask him to give you a call.
Now, here comes the punchline, though.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you think he will do it?
I don't know.
Well, see, because every time you've said no, you said he doesn't do that.
Well, I'll ask him. I don't really know. I'm not uncomfortable saying I don't know, which most people who are out in the media don't like to say. But I don't know. I don't know whether he will or not. I can ask him. I'll call him. Most likely I won't even get him. I'll just leave him a message, and I'll tell him that you'd like to talk to him. And let's see, Scott. How do you spell your last name?
That's S.
Right.
P.
Right.
E.
Right.
A.
S P E A.
E A.
Spears.
You got it.
Okay. I'll call him as soon as we're finished talking. I'll call him and ask him again. If you don't hear from him, it won't be because I haven't asked him to.
Well, and I appreciate that because you've got a circle of friends like Regis Philbin and back in the old days, Jack Parr. I mean, my
right.
goodness, what a group of people you've hung with.
So fortunate, I know.
And Andy Rooney.
Yeah, yeah.
All good people. Good
Jack
people.
Jack and Andy are gone. Yeah.
Jack and Andy are gone, and boy, were they were the.
I know.
And. What? Now, you don't know what I was going to say.
Well, I was just agreeing with what you already said.
That I said
they were. And I agree with you.
You agree they were?
Yeah.
they were at one point. You know, Jack was from Ohio.
Yes, I do remember. What part?
I'm not sure. I think he was from northern Ohio.
I don't remember.
Yeah, Cleveland, I think.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, and Hugh Downs was from Ohio.
I have a letter right now. It's out somewhere, and he wrote a letter that I saved, and it's his signature when he signed off was Thine, T-H-I-N-E, Thine.
Was it a nice letter?
Oh yeah, it was all nice, but he tended to talk like that. He used to come to visit me, which is of course I visited him, but he also visited me.
Why didn't he want to do things later in life?
I don't know. Well, you know, he married an heiress to the Hershey family, Hershey Chocolate.
Yeah.
I have this image of him being at his house, him coming around and offering us chocolate and say, this is just for the family. He was Mr. Inside.
He seemed to have a lot of neuroses, though.
I don't know. I'm sure. I mean, who doesn't? I don't know. But,
well, nothing bad. I just think when you I don't know him personally, but when you watched him on television, he always seemed nervous.
Yeah, he was uncomfortable. We kind of made it work for him.
That's what made him, you know, you had to watch.
It was such a long, I can't believe, sometimes I think to myself that I knew Jack Parr and Johnny Carson off the air.
You did?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've socialized with both of them, which is really an amazing thing for me.
You're lucky that Johnny never found out about you and Jack having this close relationship, because you wouldn't go on safari with him.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
There would have been an ugly moment there.
Why, did they have a difficult relationship? I don't even remember.
No, I don't think they had a difficult relationship, but I think there was some, because I think Jack went on.
Johnny replaced Jack, right?
Yeah, I think there was, Johnny kind of became
the Tonight Show guy.
Yeah, people forgot Steve Allen and Jack Parr, and that's sad, because they were very good at what they did.
Oh, yeah.
It's very fascinating. Charles, what do you think? You know, you're a celebrity. You're out there getting it done. What do you think of the Erin Andrews case where she won $55 million? Do you know about this?
The suit, I think, is appropriate. The fee is not it's not consistent with what other people might have done under that situation. That's been the complaint about it. Not that she was obviously wronged. But the $55 million, there's a lot of criticism in the New York papers about how does that go if that had been somebody else, not a white woman celebrity. The figures wouldn't have been anything like that, and it does happen.
Well, for people who don't know, Erin Andrews was a sportscaster. Somebody videotaped her in a provocative situation. Well, nude.
In her hotel room.
I guess she was nude. And released it online. And I guess, now see, this is something we should all be scared about. Did you hear in the court filings, Charles, where they said no matter what, they cannot take the video down?
I did hear that. And, of course, the part of the suit is the Marriott Hotel because, from what I understand, the fellow who rented the room next to her wanted to know what room she was in and asked to be in the room next to her, which is, to me, as somebody who many years ago worked in a hotel, that would have gotten my suspicions up right away.
But you work for Pinkerton.
I worked for the Biltmore Hotel at one point, maybe even right around that same time as I was a Pinkerton guard.
But what did you do at the Biltmore?
I was at the information desk, which is interesting because I have very little information.
But you talked incessantly.
Yes, I did.
It was very nice.
You got to stop me.
Charles, what do you want to do with the rest of your life? You've got many years left with us. What are your goals?
Help people and who are deserving of it. Get certain laws changed that aren't the felony murder rule, for example, is... I don't know, way out. He was sentenced to life with no chance of parole. A boy who was home asleep in bed. Nobody disputes he was home asleep in bed in Florida. Ryan Hawley's his name. And he lent his car to his roommate. He was home asleep in bed. And the roommate and others went out to commit a robbery. And they also murdered someone. And this kid was sentenced as though he was there. That's the felony murder rule. If you have anything to do with a murder, in this case, even though he was home asleep and nobody disputed it, so I worked on that case. It was in Florida, and right now I think he's no longer life with no chance of parole. It's more like 25 years with no chance of parole.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, that's the felony murder rule, and the kid was home asleep in bed. He had no prior record. He just lent his car to his roommate.
So the
and his name is Ryan Hawley, H-O-L-L-E.
People should pay attention to that.
Yeah.
Now, as far as your career, do you have any ambitions?
Well, I don't really do anything, but I'm working in a lot of things. I just was working with Louis C.K., who's really tremendously gifted guy, in his cable show. And then I'm doing this movie with Robert De Niro now, The Comedians. And then I did something with Michael J. Fogg. I seem to be doing a lot of things, and I have mixed feelings about it because, you know, I really don't go anywhere but New York. So I won't even leave and read a script if it's not going to be shot on the East Coast. So I do that, and I enjoy it. I enjoy it. It's, you know, the good news is you get to be out and around people. The bad news is the days are 12 hours long.
Did you enjoy when Johnny Carson or David Letterman called? Did you like doing those?
Sure.
So why don't you do more of them?
It's possible.
We ought to make it happen. There are still talk shows.
Well, we'll see.
Because you were on a lot. How often were you on Johnny Carson?
Oh, well, like every 3 weeks.
Every 3 weeks?
Well, I was under contract to him.
You were under contract to Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Did that pay well?
Well, it was the same pay.
Oh, was it? What is talk show pay?
I don't know, $300, something like that.
That's it?
As I recall, yeah. Then Joan Rivers was the other one under contract, and then she did a show where she went on opposite him in the same time slot at another network, and he never forgave her for that, which I thought was crazy.
Now, which part? That she did that, or
she hosted a show to be a competitor with her benefactor. And she's since passed away, but he was furious at her. And she called to explain, and he hung up on her, is what I remember reading, yeah.
So who do you think had the right side of that?
Well, Johnny, you don't go on opposite the guy that launched you.
Well, that's true, that's true. But did he have the same feeling about people like Dennis Miller or...
Well, I don't know that he was responsible for launching their careers.
He felt very... And he was. I mean, he did launch Joan Rivers' career.
Well, he did with Joan Rivers and David Steinberg and me, and Joan went on opposite him, and it wasn't successful.
No, unfortunately. And there, do you ever sit around, Charles, and think, boy, all these people are gone. That's sad.
I do, and I'm hoping there's a higher power.
Yeah, I think
mean,
so.
Well, who wouldn't hope for that? So I look for that all the time. I had something happen in the last week with two separate friends of mine who I don't even know each other. Both left me a message, and it said the same thing. I had a dream last night, and you were in it.
Oh, they both...
But they didn't know each other.
But was it the same dream?
Well, I don't know about the same dream, but they had a dream and I was in it, and which I found very odd.
Did you call them back?
I did, yeah. I spoke to both of them. I didn't ask them what the dream was, but I just was very struck by that.
That is very striking. Charles, as I say, every time you come on, the time blows by just too fast. You are an exemplary guest.
Thank you.
Fun.
Thank you.
You're exciting. You're a joy. I didn't realize I wasn't getting through the guard. Because, you know, in my world, you could come on every 3 weeks. Because these conversations are just fascinating. I think they're entertaining for about 35% of the time. And they're good. They're good, solid entertainment for people today in this world, which can be very difficult.
Scott, remind me, did I speak about Lend a Hand?
Yes, you did.
But this Lend a Hand Foundation, where I give all the money to those in dire need. If anybody's listening to your program who would like to give money to a charity, it's a write-off, it's a tax deduction, and just know that whatever you give will go to someone in dire need, the total amount. I take no money out of it. It's called Lend a Hand Foundation. You can send it to Scott, and I'm sure he'll get it on to me.
And it's 1421 Marion Waldo Road, Marion, Ohio, 43302.
There you go.
You said that kind of... That was a little snarlish, Charles.
Which one?
When you said, if people are listening.
Well, you can't assume anything, Scott.
When you're on, Charles, I assume they're listening.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks. Talk to you again.
Bye-bye. Charles Grodin, one of the all-time greats. That's all the time we have. Scott Spears heading for the dugout.